He had a miserable day today and wasn't able to go because of work requirements. Thanks to everyone, listeners, moderators, bloggers, news ninjas.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 179 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively found only here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Please stop by Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. See for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. I thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, today being Friday, September the 5th, 2008. So if you're listening at 9:01 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, September 5, you're listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and participate or join us in chat. I'll be telling you about that in just a moment. Tonight is a Just Us edition of Strictly Confidential. News, music, and callers of every description. Had to laugh at the very beginning of the show. Just as the intro began playing, I realized there was a mosquito in the room. It's one of the pleasures of living on the dirt road in the middle of the rural South, following having been through Tropical Storm Fay, which put 24 inches of water on the area. We have lots of standing pools, and the mosquitoes are just basically knocking in the door. But I think I got it. I think I got it just as the show started. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and over at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you are going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as we speak. Chat room is also a good way to participate in the show. I'm in the chat room along with some of the smartest minds in America. Not that I'm one of them, but I assure you, they are there. You're going to find there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com links for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music you hear on the show. If you'd like to join us by chat, you just click on the chat button there on strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it will take you right into the chat room after you choose a chat name. It is very easy to do. You'll also find at strictlyconfidentialradio.com the link to the main Head On Radio Network site, and that's called headonradionetwork.com, of which this show is a small part. Over at headonradionetwork.com, you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, as well as the PayPal button to make it easy for you to support the Head On Radio Network in any way you can. It keeps us on the air and keeps us doing progressive conversation radio like no one else can do. The telephone number for participating in the show is 877, the number 4, Head On. Again, that's toll-free, 877-4-HEAD-ON, translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. That's area code 304-658-3333. Again, that's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia along with the toll-free line. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the email during the breaks. Again, that's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. Last evening had a remarkable guest. His name was Barry Gold. I encourage you, if you missed that interview, to stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and have a listen. The links to the previous shows, which are hosted by White Rose Society, Ben Birch over at White Rose Society maintains them. The links are there on strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and I think you'll enjoy Barry. He was a most interesting man who writes songs about everything from love to dogs to diabetic comas. So amazing interview. I enjoyed talking to him immensely. You know, sometimes I wonder if I'm not in need of setting up an appointment with the horn psychologist, Mr. Rick Goodner. You know, these days that we're in fact, the last 8 years that we're in, have been difficult. It's as if you're in the world, but alienated from it. You know that the ruling powers would rather not have any of our progressive ideas, whether they be LGBT or any sort of progressive ideas. We're all against the law, or we're against religion, or we're trying to ruin society, or we're whining liberals, or the list goes on and on. And I've got to tell you, the period of time between, it was just a day or two, but the period of time between the Democratic Convention, which of course was so uplifting and wonderful, and then the beginning of the Republican Convention, those were great days. I have to tell you, it reminded me back in the days of Clinton. Not that Clinton did such a wonderful job, but at least you didn't have to cover your back all the time and worry so badly. But it was as if a weight had been lifted off my shoulders for those couple of days. And then as the day passed and they laid off a day because of the storm, and when they went back to work dividing America, as they always do, you could feel the weight come back. There's a palatable feel in the air from these people. It's really difficult to hang a name on it. It's part stupid. It's part manipulative. I completely agree with Bob when he says that it's not an election, people. It's an IQ test. I want to start this evening. Might as well start with her, with the woman, the woman whose hair is on its way to Jesus, her hair up in the old Pentecostal roll. You see it growing from the back, sort of like little Pentecostal horns. We've given a lot of talk, or at least the mainstream for-profit media has, about her being a hockey mom. I have found some interesting information about her today, thanks to our news ninja, Gene, who sent me several interesting articles today. Thank you, Gene. And we find out that, yes, indeed, she is a hockey mom, but she's a hockey mom first and an American second. She basically drove Wasilla, Alaska, into $20 million of debt when she was mayor to fund the construction of the hockey stadium. And so after leaving the city of Wasilla, I say city in the rural country county seat way, very small town of Wasilla is now $20 million in debt while she was mayor, funding that construction. When she was mayor of Wasilla, Alaska, she also called for the banning of certain books with inappropriate language, I tell you, in the public library. It's also not her first time of threatening to fire a state or city employee out of whim because they wouldn't do her personal bidding. She threatened the librarian for not completely giving in with full support for the mayor's office. She went after the librarian in a fairly public way up there in Wasilla. I think the general thought is that she claimed that there were complaints about various books in the library shelves. I think you'll see in a while that that's probably doubtful. It's beginning to look more and more like she simply made it up to drive in wedge issues. She seems to be quite good at that. That's how she's gotten to where she is today. She's a divisive opportunist. Now, Sarah Plain is the governor of a state with, 680,000 people. That's 15 times smaller than the population of L.A. County. But she inherited a $5 billion surplus, and about a third of their economic base comes from oil distributing. So when you decide to distribute $1,200 per person on oil bounty bonus checks, well, you find out that that gets a lot of people to just like you. You say buying votes. Another interesting fact about Sarah Palin is that she's governor for only 21 months, and she's already under criminal investigation. I think that exceeds even Republican records for turning to the dark side. A wonderful article I wrote, Prosy sent along today. She identifies strongly with her family, and then she whines when the people talk about them. She says, look at my family, look at my family, look how much my family's a part of my identity. Wait, don't look at them now. No, don't mention them. How dare you say anything about them? Oh, okay, okay, it's okay to look again. Look at my family, look at my family. Ted Anthony over at the Associated Press writes, hey, media, leave those kids alone. So he also amplifies that by saying so that the Republican Party can use them as they see fit. Of course, her party screams about sexism. Anytime anyone mentions Palin or anyway. But they didn't care at all when John McCain said something pointedly vicious and completely unnecessary about Chelsea Clinton back in the day. I don't know if you recall it. The old pasty-faced war veteran said that the reason that Chelsea Clinton was so ugly is because that her father was Janet Reno. Oh, ha, ha, ha. Don't we get that on so many levels? Another interesting fact, I believe Bob talked about this a bit, that Sarah Palin claimed in her speech that her Army son was going to be deployed on September the 11th, which is, of course, high on to treason. It's not a good idea to release the deployment date of a unit. It's considered to be endangering the son and the unit and national security, and it's illegal and something you'd expect a potential commander-in-chief to know. And then, of course, oh, by the way, he isn't actually deploying on 9/11. In other words, her son is also a political tool. Look at my family. Look at my family. Oh, no, no, no. Don't look now. Oh, look at my family now. The feminist who wrote this particular article says she wants to shake Palin and scream, snap out of it. Don't you see what you're doing to us? We haven't even had the vote for 100 years, and you're telling women what Jesus wants them to do with their vaginas. Holy shite. Stop it. Stop it. Here's a book. It's the Constitution. For the love of Christ, read it. Then in her speech, or at the RNC, of course, she emphasized victory, 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 victory. Never, of course, in typical Republican style, ever spelling it out. An article from Time Magazine points out that John McCain says he found someone with an outstanding reputation for standing up to the special interests and the entrenched bureaucracies. And when you go back and look, though, you find out that, of course, her first major race of her career was a 96 campaign for mayor of her hometown, Wasilla. Now, according to people who were involved in that election and who lived locally, Palin was a highly polarizing figure. She brought into the election for mayor partisan politics. She brought into it social issues like abortion and gun control into a mayoral race, for crying out loud. Now, that race in the past in small-town Wasilla had always been sort of like a family or a friendly kind of a intramural contest amongst neighbors. And, but boy, she hit it big. She came on big time. Back in the 90s, Wasilla was a little more than half of it as big as it is today. And the main issue then was just they needed a police department. They didn't have a police department, for crying out loud. So they set up a group to make the police department happen, and that group, Palin was part of it. It was called Watch on Wasilla, and included several of the town's more visible figures, and Palin, who wasn't elected to office yet, was in it. And Her father-in-law, Jim Palin, and his wife, Faye, were also in the group. Eventually, they did get a police department started, and a lot of the planning was done in a step aerobics class that she was a part of. And 4 years later, though, she took on her former workout buddy from the step aerobics class in a race that became very, very contentious. And this was against, Stein, the person Stein. I'll tell you more about that. Palin says that Palin's main transgression was injecting big-time politics into a small local race. You see, it was a nonpartisan job, but with her, all of a sudden the state GOP came in and started to affect and control and finance the race. See, it sounds to me as if the Republicans all along knew that they were going to need an anti-Hillary bomb. Seems to me that in a race that had never had the GOP involved, to suddenly have the GOP affecting that race. Now, see, she made issues in the campaign that hinged on issues like gun control and gun owner rights and her opposition to abortion. And it got to the extent that even national anti-abortion groups were sending little pink cards to the voters in Wasilla endorsing her. One wonders how the national abortion groups, which all feed from the same trough, managed to even figure out the address in Wasilla, much less sending the cards. The Frontiersman, which is the local newspaper, said she was just going to run your average, friendly, small-town race, but it turns into something very, very different. She said that, Stein, the person writing this, says, I just thought it was ridiculous that she should concentrate on roads and not abortion. But the little valley that the town was in was going through some flux. It was an old-time sort of libertarian pioneer ethos, and I have to shake my head when I read this. It was giving way to the rising Christian conservatism. Now, Palin, according to observers, say that she shrewdly observed that and invoked issues that mattered to the Christian conservatives and won the mayor's race by making it divisive. One wonders with how much help from the GOP so that there would be a Hillary bomb. This is back in the late 90s. She was a new face, according to the townspeople, but she was no maverick. The state party gave her a mechanism to get out of the office, and as soon as she was confident enough to brush them off, the state GOP party, by the way, she did, and she wasn't an outsider to start with. You see, she had to kowtow to the Republican Party, the GOP party that put her in office, but as soon as she could shake them, she did. And her governing was no less contentious than the campaigning that she had done. Palin ended up dismissing almost all of the city department heads who had been loyal, including a few who had been instrumental in getting her into politics in the first place. A lot of people saw that as betrayal. The police chief and a member of the old step aerobics class I told you about filed a lawsuit for wrongful termination. Gee, the librarian, the police chief, and what's this other little crisis hanging over her head? Sounds like she's got a history of off with their heads, does it not? The police chief has filed a lawsuit for wrongful termination, alleging that Palin terminated him in part of the behest of the National Rifle Association. Because he opposed, the police chief dared to oppose a concealed gun law that the NRA supported. Fire him, she says, fire him. At some point during those days, Palin told the, instituted a regular rule that department heads had to have their had to have her written permission before they could talk to any reporters. And she put a gag order on all of those people, which is something you'd only expect to find in a big city, not a wooden frame county seat intersection caution light sort of a place. She kind of blew into town like she was a big city woman, which she was not. And the Frontiersman, which is the newspaper, came out very harshly against her. Palin went along to inject religious beliefs into her policies, and she initially approached the library asking how to go about banning books, and told the librarian she thought that the voters said they had inappropriate language. No voters are saying that they said that to her. We think it was just a way to raise the issue. And the librarian was just horrified and thought that the woman, you know, that the whole issue would just blow away. But in any case, as time went by, Palin became more strident toward the librarian and threatened to fire her for not giving full support to the mayor. Now, even though she saw the town with her evangelical eyes, she did resist. She did resist calls to restrict operating the bars in town at after hours. Funny thing. Another person says, we like to call this the Bible Belt of Alaska. Now, the local chamber of commerce, the churches proliferate, says the churches proliferate in Wasilla today, and their largest and the most influential church is the Wasilla Bible Church, where Plains worships. Now, at 1:11:15 Sunday service, there were hundreds of folks sitting in their folding chairs listening to a 20-minute sermon on the book of Malachi, and they were singing to alternative rock praise songs, which are so popular in the Pentecostal churches these days. And the only sign that there was a culture war going on was an insert into the daily programming, the daily church bulletin, advertising an upcoming Focus on the Family conference on homosexuality in Anchorage, called, of course, Love One Out, and we've talked about that group before. The group promised to teach everyone who went how to respond to the misinformation in our culture and to help them overcome homosexuality. Now, Palin went on to win the election. It was a re-election, actually, by a landslide. But she was forced out of the mayor's office by term limits in 2002, and so her husband's stepmother, her husband's named Todd, so her husband's stepmother, Faye Palin, ran for mayor in her place. But Palin didn't like that. Sarah did not like that. And the reason she didn't like it is because Faye Palin was pro-choice and all of the things that Sarah could not stand. And abortion was the reason that Palin would not endorse her. And, of course, Sarah was verbal about it, and so it got down to the point where people were writing baby killer on Faye's campaign signs, all at the urgings of the right-wingers who do it oh so subtly, oh so with a wink and a nod. So her mother-in-law, Faye Palin, lost the race. And so by that time, Sarah was entering the state politics, and the hottest issue in Alaska wasn't gay marriage, and it wasn't even abortion. It was about corruption and cronyism. We all know what's going on in Alaska with the Ted Stevens and one after the other. So it's as if Sarah knew instinctively to drop all of the divisive issues like abortion, gay equality, that sort of thing. You see, her opponent was incumbent governor of Frank Murkowski. Now, Frank was already on a right-winger, and so he was against abortion, he wanted guns and all that sort of thing. So she had to make herself a brand-new political identity, so ethics reform became her brand-new calling card, which is how she got into the government there, state government. There was an interview, it's one of the people who was present for it. It was a debate. It was in October 06. She was asked, this is for the governor's race. She was asked repeatedly questions about her opposition to abortion, even in case of race, rape, rather, or incest. And she looked at the moderator. She was exasperated, and she asked if they were going to talk about anything else beside abortion. You see, this is a non-issue now. Now she's running on corruption. It was detracting from her new message, cleaning up the Capitol. So there was another issue at the time. A parental consent law for abortion was struck down by Alaska's highest court, and Palin jumped on that. The decision was outrageous, and she refused calls from conservatives to remedy the defeat by introducing anti-abortion legislation in a session that was supposed to be about drilling rights. In any case, at this point, Focus on the Family, I believe I have a reference in it here, to it here somewhere. Focus on the Family has finally endorsed her, you know. For a long time, they did not. Dobson and the rest of his crew were not about to endorse McCain, but now they're endorsing McCain simply because McCain has got this groomed person. In fact, Focus on the Family actually went up to Alaska to ask her questions a few years back. Here we go. James Dobson went from not supporting John McCain to becoming an enthusiastic cheerleader for the Republican presidential ticket. What happened? Well, Sarah Palin, that's what happened. She was groomed by Focus on the Family, you see. So while it's not known to many folks, Palin has been on Focus on the Family's radar since at least 2006. This story is from a fellow named Kevin Clarkson. He's an Anchorage attorney, and he does work for the Alliance Defense Fund, which is, of course, linked to the Focus on the Family. And he knew of Palin's work all the way back to 1998 when she supported Alaska's ballot to outlaw gay marriage. This is what got their attention in the beginning, the fact that she was trying to work up an anti-gay marriage platform. So Focus on the Family, the political arm anyway of Focus on the Family, helped her with the campaign. And even though she was only the mayor of Wasilla at the time, that didn't faze Focus on the Family. So once Focus on the Family realized they had a true friend, that's when she began to rise. And the helpful little cards from the anti-abortion folks all over the country began arriving in mailboxes. According to Time magazine, Plain turned the 1996 mayoral race into a full-blown partisan affair. When she beat Governor Frank Murkowski in the primaries, Clarkson got a call from Focus on the Family asking him about the strength of her conservative credentials. And she loved the way they put that. And that was a part of the time. It was a time when there were lots of entries in her name in Wikipedia that were of concern to Focus on the Family. The main one, you see, Wikipedia said that she vetoed a bill that would have limited marriage benefits to a married couple. And Clarkson had to explain to Focus on the Family that he had advised her to veto the bill because the legislation, the wording of the bill, there would be all sorts of court challenges, and it would actually have had the opposite effect and locked in benefits for all couples. So once he explained to Focus on the Family that Palin was indeed one of the high-haired come-to-Jesus ladies that put Focus on the Family's mind to rest. So she is on the conservative side of all issues. And so the whole trip from Dobson being an anti-McCain, he was very adamantly anti-McCain, to supporting McCain, and he said he did it for three reasons. McCain's strong responses at Pastor Rick Warren's summit in California, which of course he knew the questions in advance. The pro-life, pro-family platform of the party, and of course the selection of Plain. Yep, that's right. I'll tell you what. Let's cover some more of that in just a little while. First, I'm going to tell you another story so that we can take a break. Here, I'll put that there. Strange evening here on the dirt road. Now, pieces of paper didn't automatically organize themselves. Here, a little story about Sir Cliff Richard. Now, he is a legendary pop singer, Sir Cliff Richard. And he's come out of the closet. Now, he's in the United Kingdom. And Cliff Richard has revealed that he shared his life with a former Roman Catholic priest for the last 7 years. And he's 67 years old, and he's one of the United Kingdom's best-known Christians. How you become a best-known Christian, I'm not quite sure. But it has always been true that Cliff Richard has been a victim of persistent rumors and innuendo about his homosexuality. So he's just published an autobiography. It's called My Life, My Way. It was published yesterday. And the singer said he met Father John McEl in 2001. And at that time, the father didn't have any idea he was going to be giving up the priesthood and they would become a couple. But it was clear, it became clear that he would. And they became, and they're together at this point. Sir Cliff says the former priest shares his home and has become his companion. And Sir Cliff says, I am sick to death of the media speculation about it. What business is it if anyone else knows what we do as individuals? He has spoken in public in support of civil partnerships. Now, his music career, Sir Cliff, began in the 50s, and he scored hits in the United Kingdom, number ones every decade since. He also points out his fan base would not care if he were gay or not. And it just so happens that Cliff Richard, I had no idea that story about Cliff, but Cliff Richard performs one of my absolute favorite songs, and I hope it's one of your favorites too. We'll use it as a bottom of the hour break, and I won't tell you the title, and I think you'll know fairly quickly what it is. It's by Sir Cliff Richard, who has come out in the United Kingdom. Roll it, Bob.
so painlessly, not like lovers do.
Speaking of Sarah Palin, no, we're not done with her yet. There's so much wrong. You know, we have a little news clip just to show you what we're up against. Bob, I sent a short, it was a short, it's, I think it's called, here we go. It's called What They Think of Palin. This is a reporter walking around after the evening that she spoke at the Republican convention. Some of it's a little hard to understand, but you'll see what we're facing. You'll see how hard they bite, how they take the bait. Anyway, it's called What They Think of Palin. Bob, roll that, please. It's just...
I really like her. I really do. I think she's new blood to Washington. She's bright. She's adorable. I think she'll be a great contributor.
She's going to silence her critics tonight. This is Sarah's night.
Her on the ticket really adds a lot of excitement that I haven't seen since really Ronald Reagan.
I think she was fabulous. I think she hit it off at the ballpark. Palin is a lot better than McCain.
All right, so you liked her speech tonight?
Yeah, I was impressed.
I think she's going to do a good job. I would still prefer her over Joe Biden. Fine.
The last person you heard speak there was so gay that all of my radar went off. In fact, I had to get up and reset the circuit breakers in the room, set off the gay detectors all over the house. First woman, she's wonderful. She's just wonderful. I just love her. She's so sweet. I think they're right out of Pink Flamingos. Yes, I do. You got Cotton and Crackers and the Eggman, Connie Marble. It's a bunch of trash. Bunch of big-haired trash. National Enquirer. We've talked about that, or at least some of the other shows. I think Bob's mentioned it. It might have come up in the horn section last night. I can't remember. You know, no matter what you think of the National Enquirer with their alien stories and the baby with six heads and all the things that they do, all the trash stories, when they start sniffing around a story, you can pretty much be sure that it's a real story, because the Enquirer gets sued quite a lot, and the Enquirer when they actually do a news story, even though it is hardly a good source for everyday news, when they do a story, you can usually determine that, usually realize that it's true. And, of course, McCain's campaign has threatened legal action against the Inquirer. Today, as a matter of fact, this is from Pam Spalding, for the National Enquirer running the story about Sarah Palin allegedly, meaning she did, have an affair with her husband's business partner. Imagine that. Now, the McCain folks say the smearing of the Palin family must end, and the allegations contained on the cover of the National Enquirer insinuate that Governor had an extramarital affair, like I did, meaning John McCain, are categorically false. It's a vicious lie. Look at my family. Look at my family. No, 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 no. Not now, not now. Okay. Okay, now you can look again. Look at my family. Look at my family. Aren't they wonderful? Now, the National Enquirer has stated that the National Enquirer's coverage of a vicious war within Sarah Palin's extended family includes several newsworthy revelations, including the resulting incredible charge of an affair, plus details of family strife when the governor's daughter revealed her pregnancy. Following our John Edwards exclusives, our political reporting has obviously proven to be more detail-oriented than the McCain camp vetting process would be pleased with. Despite the McCain camp's attempts to control press coverage that they find unfavorable, the Inquirer, a giant finger to the Republican Party, the Inquirer will continue to pursue news on both sides of the political spectrum. My, imagine that. Yeah, reports that she's going to hole up in Alaska for a while to get her off the scene because she cannot be, for fear of what she might say. So it's like she's the equivalent in Bush. They can't let Bush wander too far from the farm either. Anyway, she claims she's going up to Alaska to see her son off, who's going to be deployed to Iraq, which she originally said was on 9/11, but now we find out that it's not really 9/11. So who knows when he's going, and maybe he's just not going to training camp. But in any case, we're going to pretend that he's going off to Iraq soon. The lies from those people, you really can't tell one way or the other what's going on. So the thought is that we're not going to see her on the campaign trail for just a little while. Oh, Lord have mercy. Right out of Pink Flamingos, I tell you. Right out of Pink Flamingos. Cotton crackers, mama, man. Can't you see it? All holed up there in the dark of the Alaska day with her sneaking off with her, what was it, her husband's, what was it, who's she supposed to have the affair with? God, that gets, oh, her business, his business part. And you just, after a while, there's just finally you get confused. At least Edwards took his punishment and he sulked off to the side for a while, and maybe he's still a little bit to the side, but at least he, once he was found out, but they're going to sequester her away and threaten lawsuits, I tell you, threaten lawsuits. By the way, it's a wonderful new movie coming out. I say wonderful, I haven't seen it yet, but Sean Penn is in it, which usually means it's a good film. He does a good job, in my opinion. The movie is called Milk, and it will be coming out. It's from Focus Productions. Not Focus on the Family, it's Focus Features. Entirely different. Focus something. And it will be coming out in November. It's called Milk, and it's a movie. He plays the role of Harvey Milk, who is the first openly gay man to be elected to any substantial office in the history of the planet, period. He was the openly gay city supervisor of San Francisco. This is way back in the early days. And he was murdered. Harvey Milk was murdered. So this ought to be a film with Sean Penn in it. Is, of course, going to be running mainstream. Now, there are other movies out there about the documentaries about Harvey Milk, and they're all good, but they're just that. They're documentaries. This is This is more of a movie with the drama and the things that all come with Hollywood production. So this should be interesting. Maybe it will come out before the November elections. It's supposed to come out in November. I think it was November, yeah. I don't see the reference here, but hopefully it'll come out before voting day and touch a few hearts and minds. You got to admire the French. I'll bring up the French for a minute. We'll get off that woman for a while with her big hair. The French have done something that no other country has done so far. They are saying that they are going to have in front of the EU and the UN, a appeal to decriminalize homosexuality all over the world. Now, it was reported that the French initiative is on decriminalization will take the form of a solemn declaration from the UN states rather than a vote from the UN on the matter. And the British government already advocates universal decriminalization, but at least France is going forward with it. More than 80 countries outlaw same-sex relations in all circumstances, period. The maximum punishment range anywhere from a few years in jail to a lifetime of imprisonment. And, of course, you might wonder, where is the United States in all of this? Well, they are, imagine this, predictably absent. Not there, nobody home. Lights are on, but Bush is sleeping. And there's a story buried in the stack somewhere. Hopefully I'll get to it someday. The log closets finally endorsed McCain. They were holding off, they said. Till they were making sure that Palin wasn't a rabid anti-LGBT sort of an individual. You just gotta wonder what they're thinking. Well, I found out today that yesterday was our Uncle Wayne's birthday. That's right, our very own Head On Radio Network Wayne, for whom there is no substitute. We owe him a deep debt of gratitude for all of the things he has done to keep this network rolling. And today, being the 5th, it's September the 5th, is Freddie Mercury's birthday. Now, had he not passed away, we all know who Freddie Mercury is and was, and he means something to each of us. He's been called one of the best all-time vocalists and one of the greatest songwriters. He died November 24, 1991, but he was born September 5th, 1946. So let's take a break for Freddie Mercury and for our dear friend Wayne. Roll it, Bob. Okay, we may have a problem with that studio. And we have a very festive version of Happy Birthday that Bob is probably looking for. And let's see. Oh, I know. We'll do this story. Bob is locating it now. It's a wonderful tongue-in-cheek story on a Focus on the Family's magazine called Citizen. You just got to love this story. The cover of the Citizen magazine this month, it shows a group of men who are sort of standing in a circle, and the writing on the front of this month's Citizen says, "These men led a dedicated army of volunteers that gave Californians a chance to vote one more time to protect marriage." The article, "Wonders Warriors, led an article. How noble. In fact, it's a wonder that Focus on the Family left the name of the magazine Citizen. Why didn't they just call it God or Deity?" They comment that one of the warriors didn't even bother to remove his Bluetooth headset for the cover photo. And one wonders if he is wondering if he's thinking there's going to be an emergency militant gay hijacking of a marriage that might occur during the camera shoot. And if he pulls himself away from the phone even for a millisecond, a heterosexual marriage could be left vulnerable. You know, but the, in all seriousness, though, why can't these people just pull out of these unjustified wars and bring their damn troops home? I'm so tired of the, you know, war on Christmas. It's the war on women's rights. It's the war on gay folks. It's the war on civil liberties. It's the war on privacy. But they have no clue. Oh, she's wonderful. I think she's just wonderful. It's time to get rid of this warrior stuff. By the way, Focus on the Family is calling for the Mormons are really involved in it. There's a large percentage of the volunteers who are working down in California to pass the amendment against equal marriage are Mormons. They've been commanded by the prophet. And you see, Mormons believe that the president of their church is a living prophet. So these Mormons have been commanded by the prophet to devote as much of their time and money as they can to Proposition 8. Notice money, notice time. And those who have a problem with that are told to clear it with their local leaders. Now, if they don't follow the prophet, see, the church has penalties for that. If you don't follow the prophet, in this case, by supporting Proposition 8, you could likely be considered unworthy to enter or hold leadership in the church or even walk into a Mormon temple. Oh, what a loss that would be. So anyway, we got the Mormon army coming too, and they're on bicycles and white shirts and neckties. Boy, the threat comes from left and right. I believe we have our birthday song. This is a wonderful birthday song. I don't think you've ever heard anything quite like it. I know I haven't. And this is for Freddie Mercury and Wayne. Roll it, Bob.
Die guten Wünsche ein und ich würd gern der Erste sein, der sagt, ich denk an dich und möchte dir von ganzem Herzen gratulieren. Ich wünsch dir ganz viel Liebe, dass ich dein Herz nur selten ehrt. Ne Menge Spaß im Leben und dass dein Traum mal weit wird. Ich wünsch dir ein happy, happy, happy Baby. Und dass dich das Glück niemals hängen lässt. Ich wünsch dir happy, happy, happy birthday, baby. Du bist sowieso besser als der Welt. Hey, yo, happy birthday.
And there you have the most fabulous happy birthday song that you're likely to hear anywhere. Of course, it's incumbent upon me to provide the most fabulous version of anything we could possibly play. And I thought that was very sweet. German, no less. What a great song. That group is called Flirt. It's a German group. And as we speak, Bob is looking for a Freddie Mercury track for us to run, which would be nice. I didn't send him any actual Mercury track. But speaking of Sarah Palin, not going to let it go, newly minted Republican superstar and vice presidential nominee Governor Sarah Palin may have successfully fought oil interest and corruption in her home state of Alaska, but in her hometown of Wasilla, where she was elected to two terms as the mayor, her iron hand did not curb growing social problems in the tiny community. You see, Wasilla and the surrounding area is considered the meth capital, yes, you heard it here, the meth capital of Alaska. According to published reports, Alaska state troopers have designated the entire area in which Wasilla is the largest city as the meth amphetamine capital of Alaska. And, meth use has apparently exploded in that area, where production has expanded sevenfold in just the last 5 years alone. In 2003, authorities uncovered 9 meth labs in the area, and by last year, that number increased to 42 meth labs. This is from an investigator with the troopers who works with the local narcotics team. I guess he's still with them, unless she's got some sort of personal vendetta and fired him. For instance, maybe he busted her meth dealer. I mean, you got to be whacked out on something to be as evil as that woman. In any case, we go on to read in the article, the most innocent victims, this is often true of Alaska's meth epidemic, appear to be the children. The Office of Children's Services in Wasilla said their office receives about 40 calls a month. And I'm talking in a tiny town where everybody knows each other, kids. 40 calls a month from people reporting abuse or neglect related to the use of methamphetamine. Of course, there are many, many reports of children who live in meth labs and suffer burns and death and all sorts of horrible things that happen to children when they're left wandering around in a meth lab when their parents are whacked out and have been up for 4 or 5 days. But we know where children rate with the Republicans. They're holy and desirable as long as they is in the room, or rather the womb, with a W. I don't know much about female parts. As long as they's in the womb, but once they comes out of the womb, hell, let's give them to the meth labs. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Now, Bob has given me a choice of, he's found some Freddie Mercury tracks for me, and I just don't know which one to choose. I think considering the news that we're talking about this evening and the situation the country's in, Bob, let's run the Freddie Mercury track Save Me, because I think we all could stand to be saved. And this is part of a very short, small tribute to Freddie Mercury, who is absolutely fabulous. Roll it, Bob.
Call up, 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 call up
He's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
I like crazy little thing called love better anyway. In fact, I sometimes refer to Strictly Confidential as being a crazy little thing called love that we formally refer to as Strictly Confidential. And for those of you who might think that Dwight Yoakam wrote that song, oh, no, 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 it is not true. And our friend ELO, who is the keeper of many facts, points out that Freddie Mercury wrote Crazy Little Thing Called Love while in the bathtub. Fun facts to know and tell, ELO. You wonder where these things come from. In the bathtub. What a great track. I'm going to tell you a little story here about Tim Gill. And this isn't a sad story. Tim Gill is best known for his work in politics and philanthropy, but he considers himself a career counselor. Now, Gill is a very wealthy man, and he is notoriously reclusive, gay founder of the Gill Action Fund. And he told members of the Democratic National Committee's LGBT Americans Caucus, boy, that's a mouthful, at a meeting Monday that what he's doing is simply helping anti-gay politicians find new jobs. Yes, he is a career counselor. Rick Santorum, for example, was a man who needed a change in his career. I said that all of us banded together to make it happen. And there are thousands of people in this nation that really, really need a new career. He was a featured speaker at the first of two LGBT American caucus meetings this week, and Gill told the many gay delegates in attendance that they were right to push for change at the national level. And he's a man who's poured millions and millions of dollars into campaigns of pro-gay state legislators who seek to change the laws. And he knows that these changes happen best at a local level. He says, by doing it at the local level, you give the national politicians the courage to realize that they can get elected again by voting pro-gay. They don't have to be afraid of being pro-gay. They can actually stand up and take a vote on gay people's rights, and it's not a career-ending move. Gill also noticed that said that he doesn't begrudge the gay delegates enjoying the receptions and parties thrown for them this week in Denver. It's a fun week, he said. It's important. But what is the very most important thing you can do is to go back and support pro-gay state legislators and eliminate anti-gay state legislators. In other words, help them to find a new job, your career counselors. Great perspective. And those are the marching orders that he gave at the delegates' meetings in Denver. Said we're going to hear a lot from the speakers on Wednesday. This was just part of Wednesday. About how Barack Obama is going to be good for our community. But I think we're going to hear reminders about the phony pro-LGBT McCain. It's our job when we leave here to go back home and talk to all the community, Republicans, Independents, as well as Democrats, and new Democrats and young Democrats, about John McCain and what kind of administration he would bring. This is pre-Palin. It got a lot worse when Palin hit the scene, did it not? Because you can make a critical difference. Representative Tammy Baldwin is a Democrat, Wisconsin, the only openly lesbian member of Congress, and she has said that Democrats have earned the support of gay voters by crafting a strongly pro-gay platform. There's been a lot of murmuring in the wilderness, so to speak, amongst the LGBT blogs and community in general about Obama's speech the other evening. We may not agree about gay marriage, but I think we can all agree that LGBT individuals should be able to visit each other in the hospital. And there's a lot of murmuring that, gee, after all of the fundraising and all of the biting our tongues and all of the playing the cards close, the best you could do is visit each other in the hospital. And to be fair, though, that's where they're ending the sentence. To be fair, though, this sentence did continue. To visit each other in the hospital and not to have to put up with discrimination, I believe, is the way that sentence ended. Lord, politics. I couldn't do politics. I just couldn't. I don't play those games real well. Thank God some of us do. And you know, Obama is doing it with a lot of style, isn't he? He's doing it with a lot of class. You really got to admire that, man. Oh, what a breath of fresh air. And he speaks in complete sentences. He does. And so does his wife. Oh, it's amazing. Even Joe Biden manages to cobble together a complete sentence. And so now we have temper tantrum McCain, who wants to take the bumble bunny, Mr. Bush, wants to take his place. You know, if nothing else, if we could only just elect complete sentences, I think that would hold me over for four more years. That alone. By the way, in Albany, New York, you recall we did a story a while back regarding Governor Patterson, and Patterson issued an executive order requiring government agencies to recognize same-sex marriages performed outside of the state. Well, the pro-family, whatever that means, groups were not going to have it. They were outraged. They were horrified. How dare Governor Patterson recognize and tell the government to recognize any sort of abomination marriages from out of state? Well, there's been a decision by Justice Lucy Billings of the New York State Supreme Court in that decision, the case that was brought against him. This is in the Bronx. She has said, it's part of a string of rulings by other state courts that have upheld the right of same-sex couples who are married in other jurisdictions to have their marital status recognized in their states and in New York. Now, even though gay couples may not marry within the state, a bill to allow gay unions passed the state assembly last year, but it's not come up for a vote in the Senate. In any case, the suit was filed in June by lawmakers and pro-marriage groups who opposed the governor's order, and they argued that Mr. Patterson had effectively usurped the legislature's role by issuing the order. And the governor said the order issued in May was made to protect the state from litigation by gay couples legally married in places like Canada and Massachusetts and California. But in her decision to dismiss the suit, yes, Lucy Billings kicked it to the curb. She rejected the plaintiff's reasoning and found that Mr. Patterson's order was consistent with state laws that generally require officials to recognize marriages from other jurisdictions and are silent on whether gay marriages should be excluded from that recognition. And furthermore, don't you love it when they go furthermore? It's like a judge's versions of two snaps. And furthermore, when partners manifest the commitment to their relationship and family by solemnizing the commitment elsewhere through one of life's most significant events, and then they come to New York, whether it's returning home or setting down roots or just to carry on the commitment, nothing is more damaging to family stability than requiring them to abandon that commitment upon entering the state of New York. And furthermore, she said, now the Alliance Defense Fund out of Arizona, as if they've got any business in New York, said he's going to appeal the ruling. He said, this decision enshrines the radical notion that the state of New York should forfeit its autonomy to define marriage. Oh, I don't think the state of New York needs your help, Arizona. I don't think they need your help. I think those New York boys have got it well under control with the help of Lucy Billings. Way to go, two-step judge. Governor Patterson has written a statement regarding Lucy's decision, is Lucy Billings' decision, as being wise and fair, and the determination of policy that holds valid same-sex marriages and holds them to be legal when they're performed in other states. And, of course, the decision was praised by Land Legal and the Defense and Education Fund, and Attorney General Andrew Cuomo joined in, saying the steady drumbeat of courts recognizes longstanding New York law as it applies to couples. Blah, 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 blah. So there you have it. I just love it when they deal those blows. When will those people ever go away? You know, in Florida, we've got the Protect Marriage. It's the protectmarriage.org, or is it the number four? Anyway, we have it's going to be close in Florida, is what I'm getting at. We have an amendment to vote on in Florida in November, which would create in the Constitution discrimination against LGBT folks to say that no, thou shalt never wed in this state, and the fundies are pushing it hard. There's a lot of money flowing into Florida to do this. It's thought that the election, the decision will be close. California, it's not. The general thinking is that it's not going to be close, regardless of the Mormons and the money pouring in to lift up the constitutional amendment in California to ban, to make equal marriage legal, to repeal it. In Florida, it will be close. And so there's concern. I would love to see not only the Republicans fall by the wayside, as they so rightly should. I would love to see that, and I would love to see the marriage amendments fail in California and in Arizona and in Florida. I don't think that's too much to hope for, now is it? As a man who grew up in this country in 54, 55 years, however the hell old I am, and all the BS I've seen, I just don't think that's too much to ask for, do you? But it's time for the Values Voters Summit, brought to you in part by the Fundamentalist Right, focusing on the families involved. The Family Research Council is involved. It's taking place. Remember, this happened last year in South Florida. We interviewed, it was in the Tampa area, who attended that, who told us the story about that? It was a great guest. I'm going to go back and see. Maybe he's going to this one, too. I wish I could remember his name. So many people I've spoken to and made such deep impressions on me. Sometimes I can't call a name, but I'm going to have to look that up. In any case, it's September 12th through 14th. It's taking place in Washington, D.C. It's the Values Voter Summit. You see, your votes have no values. It's a call to action, and registration is $95. Scholarships available. Well, they've invited a whole bunch of people to speak at this damn thing. Not all of them have confirmed. Let's see, Barack Obama has been invited, as well as What's-His-Face McCain. Neither one of those have confirmed. But we do have confirmations from Stephen Baldwin and Gary Bauer and Chuck Colson and Lou Dobbs and Jonathan Falwell. I think he's related to What's-His-Face. And there's Newt Gingrich. He's confirmed. It's a whole sleaze bag. The Bishop Harry Jackson, he's going to go. Rush Limbaugh has been invited, but he hasn't confirmed yet. Oliver North is invited. He hasn't confirmed yet. Governor Mitt Romney, he's confirmed. Star Parker, Tony Perkins. I'm sure I'm leaving a lot of people out. There's an awful lot of people invited. The 2007 briefing, they claim, drew together 2,600 people representing 49 states. And it's approved by Focus on the Family and the Alliance Defense Fund, the Tony Perkins Group. I think that's called something research. That's part of Family Research Council. And there's the co-sponsored by American Values, It's going to be huge. You're going to have big screen TVs and rah, 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 and they're going to teach you all about what people like me, who are homosexual activists, as of late, what we are, we're radical homosexuals. They're going to tell you all about how rotten and sick I am and how I'm going to destroy marriage. As if. But we can always rely on people like Lucy Billigs to give them a two-snap judgment. Florida, by the way, is still doodling around with their making it easier for ex-convicts to vote. Charlie Crist, our gavener, has ordered Florida's parole agencies to make more information available, including voter registration forms, to ex-convicts to enable them to exercise their newly restored rights. I believe I've told you that Florida is one of a handful of states that permanently disallows voting. Oh, they claim you can vote again, but you know, you throw your hat in the pool with hundreds of thousands of other people, and they look at like five cases a year. So it's like winning the lottery to get your vote back. So the governor said the order would help more ex-convicts benefit from policy changes, blah, blah, blah. Now, he announced this 2 days. It's amazing how the press affects the governor. He announced this 2 days after the Orlando Sentinel reported that over 100,000 ex-convicts have had their rights automatically restored in the past year, but only 9,000, which is less than 8%, had registered to vote, so they wanted a voter registration packet. There are thousands and thousands of other people who have not had their rights restored for no reason other than backlog. And they use the phrase automatically restored, but in fact, they're really, really not. If it were automatic, everyone would have their rights back. But the problem, according to the Orlando Sentinel, is that thousands of former felons, including many who had been released from prison years and years ago, imagine this, didn't get notices that their rights had been restored. And also the civil rights groups are after Chris and wants him to mail out rights restoration certificates to a backlog of at least 60,000 felons. And also the governor said after the Orlando Sentinel had a few words to say about it, Florida Parole Commission should have available on their website so that you can look up for a copy of your restoration certificate and print one out at any time. Lord have mercy. Here's another, where was this from? Madison, Wisconsin. Of course, Barack Obama is the first black presidential nominee in history, but some say a disproportionate number of black men won't be able to vote for him come November, and that's because of the state laws on voting rights and convicted felons. We're talking about Wisconsin. And studies have shown per capita, Wisconsin has the highest incarceration of blacks in the nation. And according to the American Civil Liberties Union, that means 1 in 9 voting age blacks in the state are currently not allowed to vote. And in Wisconsin, there are roughly 22,000 people in state prisons, and those inmates are banned from voting in the upcoming presidential election. But what people may not realize is that tens of thousands of other convicted felons aren't able to vote either, and that's because the state law says that people not only have to complete their prison sentences to become eligible to vote, they have to finish their probation or parole. And the State Department of Corrections says that more than 41,000 people in the state are currently on community supervision and that they should be allowed to vote on that. Bob, I don't know if you still have a very short bit of audio from just a couple of days ago. Bob, you still have the Wisconsin Democrat, Joe, loaded? It's a short MP3 of a representative from Wisconsin talking about the voting rights there. Bob is checking on that now. Ah, oh, Lord. Let's see. Here we go. You know, I need to tell you, too, that we have, I didn't tell you who the DJ across the street is. Great set tonight. Absolutely wonderful set tonight will be Jerry Bonham. Absolutely, absolutely beautifully, beautifully mixed by Jerry Bonham. And I'm looking forward to that. In fact, I played it a couple of times today. It's really something. Guess what? Greenland Greenland, of all places, not Iceland, but Greenland, has introduced a discrimination protection for gays. And it's a new law that makes it illegal to discriminate against homosexuals. It's going to be introduced in Greenland, as it has emerged in Greenland, that gay men struggle with homosexuality more than women do. Well, I'm not sure how they figure that if they're in Greenland, but nonetheless, that's what they think. Now, Greenland's news site reported that the law, which legal experts said was not necessary until now, will take effect in 2010. The officials in Greenland say homosexuality hasn't been something that has been important for people until now, but Greenland, who is a self-governing Danish province with a population of 5,600 people, is the only Nordic country in the region without such legislation. And the reason they're thinking it just affects men, the historian is saying that he believes that while lesbians can fulfill traditional female roles, you know, I would imagine that some lesbians would take issue with that. Don't you agree? While all lesbians, this is what he's implying, all lesbians can fulfill traditional female roles, but gay men are often thought of as incapable of performing masculine tasks such as hunting and are discriminated against. Well, honey, I have met some lesbians that in no way will be bothered with fulfilling a traditional female role, and more power to them. The passing of the law has enormous symbolic value, they say, though, and it sends out an important message to Greenland's gays and lesbians. He suggested that a combination of the media's willingness to report about homosexuality and the legislation preventing discrimination will make it more accessible. By the way, did you hear about the porn star who's been barred from touching 6 inches and footlongs? Yes, indeed. A young gay porn actor by the name of Kurt Wild. He's a porn star. He was fired from his job at a St. Louis area subway. Why, you ask? Well, because a customer recognized him and threatened to boycott unless he was fired. This just completely amazes me. If he was that, you know, what customer? How did he recognize him? Is this another Republican who's doing like home research on LGBT folks? That must be what it is, doing research. That's the way he recognized it. Was that, you know, those Republicans, they seem to do a lot of research. So in any case, the subway fired the gay porn star named Kurt Wild. And one wonders, as I say, how the customer became familiar with Wild's work. And, you know, I can't say that I would recognize a porn star, but maybe I don't get out often enough. You know, this guy, I guess he probably only watches gay porn for the plots and the development of characters and the critical review. So the article reports that no one is sure if Kurt Wild has managed to find another job, but there's another gay porn cliche. Maybe he'll play the pizza boy at some point in his life. It's really not funny. The man was fired. Of course, there's no protection for being gay. And what the hell is having been in a movie got to do with? I guess, you know, probably the customer, whenever he walked in and saw him, had such a wild erection, unstoppable erection, that he was embarrassed. And every time he walked into the subway, he had to go to that particular subway in the city the size of St. Louis. He could go to any subway, but in any case, he had to go to that subway. And he just had an uncontrollable erection, and that's why Kurt Wild had to go. Now, Kurt Wild, in a reply in a short note, I don't have it in front of me, said that maybe he should boycott the subway too, for not standing up for his rights. And what difference does it make what he did? I mean, gee, everybody's been in a porn film at least once, hasn't everybody? I haven't, but I imagine there are a lot of people who have. God knows there's a lot of people who would like to. America, America. Let's see, whatever shall I do? Oh, we have that short, we have that, the short clip. This is the Wisconsin Democrat. He's talking about, restoring voting rights in Wisconsin. Bob, roll that. That's a short clip.
Once you've served your time and you're released from prison, we expect you to participate in society again, and we encourage you to take part in the democratic process and vote. It would save money, it would help reintegrate people back into society, and it would make the administration of elections much smoother.
There you go, man himself. You see, it is a very difficult for the administration, the voters' offices, the voter registration people, the elections offices, to know who's through with parole and who's not, and if they're on probation or if they're in violation or what the status is. So there needs to be just a simple way to do that. But I did want to tell you this bit. The Journal of Science has found that girls' math scores on standardized tests were equal to boys in grades 2 to 11. So there you have it. There is no disadvantage. Now, there's Elizabeth Steve says, as a kid, it would have never occurred to her that boys were supposed to be better at math than girls. After all, her mother was an engineering technician, no less, and used math all the time. And she said, I had a role model of a woman who could do math. And Stevens is now an associate professor of chemistry in the college in Bridgeport. And when she got older, though, she learned that not everyone was so lucky, math being a big part of chemistry. She says she still sees many female students who have hang-ups about their aptitude for arithmetic. You know, this stuff is... It's the 21st century, folks. We've been to the moon. Yes, we have. We've had people walking around the moon, and we're still wondering about women doing math. So anyway... She says more than males are. They tend to believe that they're bad at math, and she trains them to say, or gets them to say, I used to say, I used to be bad at math, but I'm not anymore. And when they actually actualize that in their lives, well, golly, magic happens. I didn't mean to tell you that story for a while. So all of you folks who are calculating math and calculating how much longer you can stand the republic policy and the Republicans in office and in power in this country. For those of you who are calculating that using calculus and trigonometry and all the things that you would probably need to do that, the women are just as good at it as the men. So I think what we're going to do now is mosey over to the gay bar across the street. Now our DJ at the gay bar across the street is none other than Mr. Jerry Bonham. He's of... Jerry played at the Trocadero in the 30th anniversary. This particular segment is from his Soul Revival, or actually Soul Recharge CD series. You can find out about Jerry Bonham at jerrybonham.com. That's JerryBonham.com. And it's a particularly fun mix this evening that Jerry has sent along. So as we gather up our umbrellas and our parasols and our raincoats and our pocketbooks and our lipstick, we'll head on over.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors. We'll be right back.
Just say your love for me.
truly blessed on Strictly Confidential with some of the most amazing DJs on the planet. That was Mr. Jerry Bonham. Jerry Bonham is just fabulous. You can find out more about Jerry Bonham over at jerrybonham.com. That's J-E-R-R-Y-B-O-N-H-A-M. And by the way, if you have a favorite DJ and would like to hear him on the gay bar across the street or her, just drop me a note to Peter at headonradionetwork.com and let me know, and we'll see if we can get that set up for you, or you can set it up for us, either way. And we'll let you know how to do that. I've enjoyed being here tonight, enjoyed being with you. It's a Friday evening, so there's not a live horn section, but there is a replayed horn section coming up, and a replayed John Fox, if you haven't heard it. Need to let you know that the programming is not over for the weekend on Strictly Confidential, or rather on the Head On Radio Network. Tomorrow evening, we continue live for the weekend with Rick Smith. His show starts around 5:30 Saturday evening. We have Rick's Place with a horn psychologist, Rick Goodner. That begins at 7 p.m. Saturday, followed by Billy Shears with the fabulous show Night Sounds at 9 p.m. all Eastern times on the Head On Radio Network. And wow, what a wild week it's been. I got to tell you. And we got hurricanes coming. So if the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise, literally, I'll be with you all week next week. Looking forward to it. And in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...